Welcome to episode 119 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week, we'll be looking at loads of things from Gits to PlayStation Now. And for our feature, we'll be discussing ageism in film and television.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also comment, you can find links to social accounts, plus you could get in touch right now and ask us questions or comment on the show by email at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk, or you could try tweeting us at nerdspodcast. Also, I'd like to remind people that we'd really appreciate if you could answer our current listener survey. There's a link in the show notes, or you could try and fill it out right now at bit.ly/nerds2015. But we've got a bunch of news stories. Retroid decided to rain news stories down on me today.
You have some news.
There's news. It was just announced before we were recording a Variety, Variety or Deadline?
It was Variety.
Yeah, Variety getting the scoop on Scarlett Johansson agreeing to star in the DreamWorks adaptation of Ghost in the Shell.
Gits.
Yep,
they are Gits.
With DreamWorks working on it, this means that obviously it will be animated, one assumes, rather than live action. It seems kind of... It almost feels like kind of pointless to have them animate it rather than just doing a live action adaptation, or is that just me?
I would have thought it would be live action, but yeah, with it being DreamWorks, who the hell knows? I just think it's why is it Hollywood do these things?
Because
they want to put us through despair and torture.
It's a form of, some people would argue, it's a form of cultural imperialism by the US. You've got to brand any... I'm surprised that they don't just try readapting the classics a bit more often. Oh, wait, they already do. And smother it with their cultural attitudes and nuances.
It's all about money, because Hollywood is an industry.
It's all about money.
If they don't have to completely source everything from original IP...
I mean, what the hell? They'll be making a biblical epic with all the main leads being white next.
Oh, wait.
Oh, shit.
According to Variety, this is a quote, Rupert Sanders is on board to direct. Avi Arad and Stephen Paul are producing the film, and it's using a script by Bill Wheeler. Mark Sorion is exec producing. For those wondering on the writer and directing front there, Rupert Sanders previously directed Snow White and the Huntsman, and that's his only finished feature so far. He's from the UK.
Most people in Hollywood are.
Bill Wheeler, aka William Wheeler, as he is on IMDb, wrote The Hoax and The Reluctant Fundamentalist.
I am despair.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say here that the manga is one of my favourite mangas, and it was very, densely written.
Mm.
And I loved it for that. And then, was it Mamoru Oshii who did the anime films? I've only seen the first anime movie, and I thought it was poor. And one of the things that, put me off so much was it was being heralded from the rooftops wherever I looked. And everyone loved it apart from me. I just thought it was weirdly simplistic. And I just didn't think it was a very good adaptation. So I've got absolutely no hope for a Hollywood film. But so far as I'm concerned, nothing else exists, only the original manga by Masamune Nishiro.
Paul and I are actually quite fond of the actual anime series that is a weird take on the whole universe.
But Standalone Complex.
Yeah.
I've not seen that because, frankly, the movies put me off.
It's not related to the movies?
Oh, I know it's not, but when it's something... I've even got the original Japanese manga as well of you know, Ghost in the Shell. So, you know, and I could read so much of it at one point. Forgotten it all now. But, yeah, it was just, you know, once burned. I know there's a series. Yeah, no, I don't want to get disappointed again.
Okay.
That's a fair comment.
I think overall I'll probably be disappointed regardless of Scarlett Johansson's involvement.
She seems to be playing that type of character quite a lot.
She's suddenly become the go-to for...
Action heroine.
Yeah. She is action lady.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about the Major is that it's not all about the action.
She's a detective, along with everything else.
She's inherently strong-willed and very, very intelligent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I'm going to move us on to our next story, which is, well, I've titled it in my notes, is Netflix blocking VPN users. But, of course, Netflix has always had a bit of an effort to block VPN users. But evidence points to it have been sort of stepped up recently. Yes. With recent articles indicating that a lot of people are suddenly finding that they can't access US Netflix when they previously could.
Mm.
The suggestion as to why this is the case is due to Netflix being under increasing pressure from film and TV distributors to block users from outside the US accessing the US version of the service. And why would they want that? Because they... aka film and TV distributors, like being able to track which territories their money comes from, plus, you know, age rating laws. But that first reason, more than anything, it's to do with money. They seem to care about money in ways that doesn't make sense, because...
If they're getting the money.
Yeah, because the way things are going down, it's like, okay, so you're going to get a bunch of people from outside the US probably unsubscribe from Netflix. So what?
In this day and age, with the digital age, I don't understand why there's this need for this whole territory business.
Because they're stuck in old school mode.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, different films are distributed by different companies in other territories. So,
with the age of digital distribution, that becomes a bit pointless, and is it due to local laws or whatever? But then that seems to become less and less of a case, because when you talk to, when I've read articles from with the prospective distributors about this kind of thing, and they're like, oh, well, you know, we want to know which territories are genuinely performing for us.
Well, I can see the point to that, but on the same token, why can't they just let us watch what we want to friggin' watch?
And make sure that people are paying for it at the same time, which is what a Netflix subscription does.
And now... a few things. Obviously, things in the UK, if they're released on DVD or in cinema and such, they need to have, you know, certification by the BBFC.
Mm.
Yes.
That doesn't hold for TV, does it?
No.
Would Netflix count as that? Or?
A lot of stuff that is on Netflix, if you look at some of the stuff that hasn't had a mainstream release, you know, either in cinemas or television... Yeah. Tends to have varying ratings. G's used a lot for stuff which, if you actually look at what the content is probably, if the BBFC had been let at it, is going to be like a PG 12 or 15.
Yeah.
Right. So
I love the BBFC. They're my favourite.
So I would say that currently content on UK Netflix is not all certified by the BBFC anyway.
Yeah. So that makes me think... It's less about the certification, because I understand there's all the distribution problems
and
things like that. All that makes sense to me, but I just think half the time it just comes down to they want to charge different prices in different territories because they think they can get away with it.
Mm. Also restricting the content, though, because I mean, when you consider how much content there is on the US version compared to the UK version, it's daft, and it's not just... I know you... A lot of people think it's just the American stuff, but actually there's stuff from like BBC America that was actually originally on the BBC over here that you wouldn't mind rewatching. That's not available in the UK, but it is in the US.
There
just boggles the bloody mind, you know.
That's it. I think going from personal experience, even though we've got a subscription to Netflix and, you know, we do enjoy Netflix, we've heard a lot of people turn around and say that it's crap because they can't find anything that they actually want to watch. on there.
In the UK version, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Exactly.
It is looking
Give us the US version and it's fine.
Looking at sort of like the
As with everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of frustrating, and the fact that distributors don't seem to be moving with the fact that with the internet, it's not just a distribution channel, it's a communication channel, and people talk Exactly. about stuff, and people don't want stuff spoiled for them all the fecking time, which is what happens with social media today, and even just general, you know, websites, news sites,
I just thought of another problem. Well, obviously, when it comes to distributors and whatnot, because, say, for example, if you're trying to watch something come 4OD, then you can get, like, adverts and whatnot. Yeah. But Netflix has never actually had adverts.
Nope.
So yeah. I think that's why, you know, you don't get that many Channel 4 programs on that. I mean, you do get some, but, you know, just not as many as you should be able to get.
I mean, as an example, I watched Peep Show on Netflix. Because I'd only caught the occasional one, and of course UK TV being as it is, you only had the 6-episode glut every now and again, and they didn't often start it from the beginning. So something like Netflix is perfect,
yeah,
for that kind of thing. And yeah, there are some BBC series and stuff like that on Netflix. I mean, before we came on air, I just checked with my mate Dave Internet if. He could,
He's a good bloke.
Yeah, with him being in the United States legitimately and everything, whether he could, watch Netflix in the US, absolutely fine, with him being in the US, as I said, completely legitimately. And he had no problems watching a Star Trek DS9 episode, or at least, a chunk of it, which isn't on UK Netflix, so... If they are changing things, if they are trying to block VPNs, I'm not sure they're doing, they're being trying too hard at it.
I'm just thinking on the TV front a moment as to why TV distributing would be kind of against it. And it's because a lot of stuff might still be on the air in the UK versus the US.
Yeah.
Well,
traditionally, UK TV could be cheap bastards.
Mm.
Because they knew it was such a massive pain in the ass to get things over from the US, so they would wait and get things. And yeah, now, of course, that's not really a possibility for them to do it anymore, because if it's not available for them to watch, people will just get it other ways.
But then that means they're losing out on potential monies, which is just silly. And
it's just, we're trying to give you money for these things. Here's the money. Why don't you want the money?
I think the other part of the problem is that, it's not just like, kind of techie geeks that are kind of doing this type of thing. It's people asking other people about, websites that will enable me to kind of view this, or websites that will enable me to view that, and it's not a geek problem.
It
used to be, you say, but now it's you only have to have a look around, and most of the time you'll find somewhere to.
There's a guide.
I mean, I had a bit of a rant about this kind of problem on Hex, like. Sometime in November, I think. And I just... basically, I think I'm going to move us on because I just go around in circles. to a slightly more positive bit of entertainment news. As Channel 4 have recently commissioned a pilot for a series called Space Arc. The official synopsis is, it's 6 months, 1 week, and 4 days since the Earth was destroyed by an asteroid. 200 humans survive on board a huge space ark. Their mission? To find a new planet where the human race can be re-established. The ship is populated by the finest minds the Earth had to offer, plus an inept crew, an android bear pilot, and a member of the public who won his place by lottery. In the pilot episode, the crew encounter a seemingly friendly alien race whose spacecraft has broken down. What could possibly go wrong? There we go.
It's been
kind of... They could cancel Utopia.
Yep.
that's what could go wrong. Anyway, that's just me chipping in there. I was listening to the soundtrack earlier, and it's just it brought back the pain.
I mean, I think some websites have been touting it as a cross between Red Dwarf and
yeah.
Oh, what's Majiggy?
What's Majiggy?
I can't remember now.
What's Majiggy?
So other sci-fi shows.
I'm thinking they sound like Golga Finchams.
I mean, in a way, it kind of sounds a little bit like Battlestar Galactica.
Well, you got...
Golga Finchams, Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially the inept crew.
Yeah, very true. Inept. So, yeah, more of a cross between Red Dwarf and Hitchhikers.
Definitely.
Just due to the ineptness and the humour that'll probably bring. I like that the android is in fact a bear-shaped android.
Bear-shaped android.
For no apparent reason.
He just could have a bear. It's Paddington Bear. So.
I mean, the British public does like animals, so maybe that's what they're hoping to play off of.
I mean, obviously, with kind of comedies like this, you can't really kind of get a sense of how the show's actually going to feel.
No word on when and if the pilot will obviously make it.
I was going
to
say that was the interesting thing in this thing. This pilot is not intended for transmission. Yeah. What the freaking hell are they making it?
Well,
for
they
then?
Might do it. You know, they might transmit
they might,
it if they
might
if
spend
they
spend loads of money making something we'll never see.
Yeah.
Or they may put it on 4OD and see how it goes.
Yeah. Mm. There's means and ways.
Basically. Well, 4OD and you know. Sell it to a few
Netflix US,
yeah, and see how it flies. Because after all, a TV production company now doesn't have to sell something to TV,
yeah,
for broadcast.
This is true.
Netflix original.
Yeah, I'm going to move us on to our next story, which is something that came up before Christmas. Obviously, you know, Christmas is. Christmas, and I didn't hear about it until today. But writer Tess Vigeland did a piece on The Guardian just before Christmas, looking at how authors are increasingly being judged by the number of Twitter followers when it comes to trying to get in with a publisher, and probably one suspects literary agents as well. And basically, you've got a lot of people who they may have written something actually good. But publishers are turning them down because they're not very prominent on social media like Twitter.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
To summarise, it's bollocks.
Yeah.
Some people are really good at writing and terrible at social media. I've seen people who I really like be bloody awful at social media.
Yeah.
So
I'm not fantastic at social media.
Social media isn't the be-all and end-all.
Yeah, but this is as the marketer among you gents, which is true.
Yeah.
Basically, it seems to me as a marketer, he's a bit more perhaps with it than some publishers when it comes to forms of social media marketing. They are perhaps far too interested in vanity metrics like follower numbers.
Yep.
And sort of like probably how many faves that, you know, author might get on Twitter or retweet. Might be a bit too obsessed with that rather than like you could be, unless you actually dig deep, you could be an author who's decided to just buy a whole bunch of followers that are just either bots or just, you know, general fake accounts.
God, yeah.
And then just be like, oh yeah, look at all this, look at this, and you could just constantly post crap. But unless you can show that there's actual engagement happening with that social media, then that's kind of pointless. You could have somebody who has maybe, I don't know, like 100 followers on Twitter. Most of those people actually interact with them, and therefore they're real people interacting with them, 100 people, plus their ability to use word of mouth.
That'd
be quite good.
Yeah, I've seen people who write solid gold and they only have a few hundred followers, if that.
Yeah.
And then over New Year, what was it? I saw someone pointed to a tweet by Harry Styles, which just said, Happy New Year, it's 2015. Possibly even less than that. And it got 80,000 retweets. So, to treat it like a high score is bollocks.
Yeah, and also, it's annoying because traditionally, and it's been eroded so much over the past sort of 10 years, traditionally publishers are the ones that are meant to invest in marketing and putting an offer out there so that, you know, the author can do what they're meant to be doing, which is writing more content, you know, actual books.
Mm. Oh, that's crazy.
You know.
Why would they do that when they could just tweet?
Meanwhile,
Happy New Year.
Meanwhile, a lot of publishers have been cutting back on spending for marketing and that, and they've been expecting authors to do a lot more self-promotion, which is just insane. So it's like, well, how the hell are they meant to write anything?
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, when you're getting authors to do self-promotion, then you're basically putting your, as a publisher, you're putting your name in their hands, which is kind of, you know, I mean, at the beginning of DVDs, you know, you get like, oh, yes, the actors and whatnot, their views do not represent the company values and whatnot. And by kind of pushing them to do that type of thing with authors, they kind of are turning around and saying, actually, well, we're giving them carte blanche because, you know.
I mean, I can't remember who it is, but a lot of publishers for a while have apparently been pissed off with like how much control Amazon has over the publishing landscape.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that a lot of publisher websites, when it comes to their authors, there's very little information on the website. Very few details about what they've written and how it's been received, and certainly nothing that balances out the reviews. So that, you know, you see more than just positive ones. Mm. And there's like almost no other content, you know, no links to interviews that these people have done. They're not doing any real content marketing around their authors. And only a couple of publishers have started to realize, oh, yeah, we could do like, mini micro websites or mini websites or whatever around our authors where we have links to or actually include reviews of the book from different perspectives. And
what a crazy idea, some interviews.
And oh my god, we could use some multimedia, like have an audio interview or something. Fucking hell, you know, that kind of thing. But a lot of publishers still aren't doing that. The publishing industry generally is very old fashioned. It takes a while for, you know, them to sort of pick up things and kind of move with it.
Well, that's
why ebook publishing, the main pioneers for that have been indies rather than, you know, mainstream publishers.
The newspapers have been taking advantage of all that kind of thing for years. They'll have an interview or something, you know, with, you know, whoever. But they could also post up the video.
Yeah.
And there's the whole thing with The Guardian. They bought the video of that bloke who got beaten by the, you know, policeman. One of the protests.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it completely contradicted the policeman's story. And of course, they published it on their website. So they can mix all kinds of different media together. And I just don't quite understand why, you know, these supposed experts in publishing just seem to be stuck in, we can do books.
Yeah.
And by the way, could you go around, you know, passing out leaflets?
Yeah,
which is effectively what they're doing by saying, could you push it on Twitter?
Yeah. like I said, there's, you know, that it still seems like the majority of publishers are like that. There are a few cottoning on that they could do a lot with very little content, but just putting it in the right place in a way that the right audience will see it means that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have to put tons of pressure on your darn writers. So, yeah, that's a thing that's happening at the moment, and it just kind of annoys me.
Just thinking there, you know, for the approach of you can have a very successful Twitter account that has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with what it's supposed to be about.
Yeah.
But you know, still do good for your company is Betfair Poker. Yeah, you know precisely what I mean, don't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
It has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with Betfair Poker, but people like the account, so it does well for your brand. There's an example of, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the pushing yourself. Yeah. Just do something that gets you fans.
Or do you know what, you know, publishers could do? They could make sure they actually employ marketers and have budgets set aside so that from their own official Twitter accounts, they can promote authors. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
But
another crazy idea.
I know. And it moves on to our last news story of the week. And PlayStation Now subscription details were announced in the US today on the US Woo! PlayStation blog. I'm undecided as to whether or not this is really a good deal. To quote, the subscription service will be available first on PS4 across North America and will come to other PlayStation Now-enabled devices in the future. You'll be able to choose from two subscription plans, 1 month for $19.99 or a 3 month package for $44.99 or about $15 a month. The subscription provides access to a large and diverse catalogue of PS3 games ranging from action to RPG and everything in between. And what they mean by access to a catalogue is that you go all kind of on live / Gaikai, which is what they bought to create PlayStation Now. And you stream the game data to your device and play it.
Sounds quite good until you realise, well, I really need to see what the actual streaming's like, what the quality's going to be like. Because I still don't believe it's going to be that great.
Well, no, because, I mean, PS3 games are quite sizable buggers, you know?
Well, the idea is it's supposed to just be streaming, the video and sound to you and taking your command inputs, but that's still, the best summary I could put up, on Twitter when I read this earlier today was slightly, in best case scenario, slightly worse image quality because you're streaming compressed video over the internet.
Mm.
You're not playing on the machine in front of you or connected up to your TV with slightly worse input lag on the controls. And again, that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that's not really that appealing to me.
Especially if you've already got a PS3.
Or, PlayStation Plus account that you're already paying out almost £40 a year for.
I mean, yeah, my God. I mean, compare this, $45 for 3 months. That's round it up. I'll say $50 for. I'm not quite sure of the dollar price of PlayStation Plus. Compare the value you're getting there, and I'm sure you'll have people going, "Oh, but it contains over 100 games." First of all, some of these they're not retail releases. They are just like PlayStation Network / Xbox Live Arcade level releases. And some of those have been my favorite games of that generation, but to include them in the list and say, so many, over 100, it's a little bit cheeky.
Yeah. I'm also concerned that it may lead to them decreasing the number of games that becomes available with PS Plus subscriptions.
I would be more concerned with that if it was included.
Mm.
But I'm just looking at the prices for this and I'm thinking, $15 a month, which would, if it was actual straight conversion, it would probably be, what, about £8? Round about that, for the UK. £8 a month for streaming games. No.
How about they just let us buy the titles? If people really want backwards compatibility, and we just buy the blinking titles.
I just don't understand why they're doing it like this when they could just actually put, have games either emulated or ported in some way. It's like, yes, I know it's a bit more complicated than just, do it and it's magic. But you could actually sell people the new games, the new versions of the old games, and people would be happy with that.
Yes.
So I just think, the whole cloud gaming thing is just a bad idea. It's going to be a little bit like, 3D TVs. The industry loved it. Some people in the media and some gamers really liked it, and everyone else was, I can't be asked. Especially when, it requires me to do this, this, and this, when I could just do the other, and it could, would be slightly less hassle-free and more or less the same experience.
Yeah.
It's...
That's fair enough.
Oh, and what reminds me about, what this reminds me of, is the Japanese version of PlayStation Plus has a rotating, as in they swap out titles, catalog of PS1 games included in PlayStation Plus.
Oh.
I would much rather have that.
Yeah.
Than a few games which, so I bet it's going to be the, you know, the a lot of the really popular ones, which means that it's going to have stuff that I would want, but it's not going to be there.
Yeah.
Did any Persona games come out on PS3? Like, as in the actual RPG, not the arena fighting games?
No.
I couldn't tell you. I picked up a few because I was in the shop and I saw them really cheap, and it's like, I've not seen those before. I'm not going to see them again.
I saw some people tweeting, oh, yeah, it'd be a great way to play some Japanese RPGs that I miss. I'm thinking, well, actually, during the PS3 generation, Japanese RPGs weren't that fantastic at all. It's PS2 and older. That's pretty good.
That reminds me. What about that game? I can't remember the name of it, helpfully. The one which people had been campaigning for it to be released in the US, you know, in English.
Mm-hmm.
And they announced that it was coming to, you know, PS3 and Vita and, you know, anything that could play a PS1 game at that PlayStation experience.
Well, Final Fantasy VII?
No.
That did get announced at the PlayStation experience.
You know about Persona 5?
No. This is helpful. Throw a list of games. No, not that. But whatever it was that people had been campaigning, you know, to be released, and they said, yes, it's, you know, it's available now to buy on PSN, and everyone going, whoa! I don't think we have it at all yet.
Dragon Quest of some kind?
No.
was it like a new franchise type thing?
It was a PlayStation 1 RPG 2D, which is...
Elundra?
No.
Star Ocean?
No. So I do actually own those on PS1. So
can I have a 50-50?
No, because I haven't got a bloody clue. I can't reach it.
It does remind me of a PS1 RPG that I would like to get my hands on, which is actually rare, but it has been released, which is Legend of Dragoon.
I'm going to look up PlayStation Experience and see if we can get to the bottom of this darn game.
But yeah, you know, either way, they've got it in the in North America, and we don't have it yet. So, you know, whatever RPG it was, I'm just going to sign it. Google in the background and no one will ever know.
I'm looking now. I think I've managed to pick up physical copies of pretty much all the PS3 games that I wanted to play, and I'm slowly working my way through them here and there. You know, Heavy Rain and a bunch of Uncharted and, you know, those kinds of things.
Most of the games that I see over there, they're kind of multiple games in one because they're like re-releases and stuff. Stuff like Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy X and stuff.
Old school. No, are those all indies? I've looked at the EE book, which is probably not a good thing if they haven't announced it for. Let's try IGN. But yeah, PS3 games.
Suikoden.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
Or Suikoden. I'm probably slaughtering the name, but yeah, that's the RPG which everyone was banging on and saying it's brilliant, but they were, you know, it's not on PlayStation Network and, you know, blah blah blah. And they said, yes, you can all play it, apart from you people in Europe. You smell funny.
Okay.
That used to happen quite a lot.
Yeah, with your funny money and weird voltages and bizarre plugs.
And strange screen rates and all those other problems.
Although that doesn't exist anymore now, does it? So, well, theoretically.
Great. PlayStation Now probably won't be that fab, at least. Also, just the general thing which we haven't managed to trot out yet, but which we always like to bring up when the idea of streaming games rather than, you know, downloading and then playing them comes up, is connection abilities. It's going to be more intensive than Netflix. So I'll
say again, as someone who's got an unlive box, it was a bit shit. There we go, that's my capsule review.
All right, I'm going to move us on to what we've been up to of late. Retroid, I see that you've been doing all the things, including old favourite.
Yeah, what would that be? Wouldn't be Elite Dangerous you're alluding to, would it?
Oh, I don't know, it might be.
High Rule Rule, isn't it?
Shut up, you.
Funnily enough, I had a quick go on High Rule Warriors.
But before we podcasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need 70.
But not Elite Dangerous.
What happened recently in your Elite Dangerous shenanigans?
Well, I'll be very quick with the Elite Dangerous bit. I decided to jet off and explore one of the nebulas. I was going to say close by, but you're talking about 200 light years away from inhabited space in the game, so it's quite a trek to get to. Got into the nebula. It was very nice. Went into a system. Thought, oh, there's quite a lot of stars in this system. This is a little bit unusual, you know, to see quite so many stars.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got a guest, apparently.
Mix a chin from a cat.
Yes, this is true. So you're exploring the star system.
Yes. And, you know, so lots of suns, and I noticed that some of the stars seemed to move a little bit when I was looking around.
I
thought, oh, that's a little bit weird. And I thought, ooh.
Did you get closer?
I did. I eventually found out what was causing it, and it was a small black hole in the system.
Did you get sucked in?
I didn't. I managed to avoid getting anywhere near to it because it was in a remote part of the system, nothing near to it, so it didn't have an accretion disk or anything like that. Mm. Again, I don't know if that's modeled in the game. I'm presuming it might be. But when I flew relatively close to it, it was bending the stars behind it like a lens.
Ooh.
So that was quite cool. I'll just look up through my top canopy while I jet past it and don't go anywhere nearer because I'm not going to bloody risk it because it's a black hole.
Yep. That sounds sensible enough. Not like what those folks in a certain recent sci-fi film did, which will remain nameless because it's spoilers.
It's not going to do that. And then I went home and sold the maps. Hooray.
Yay. What else have you been up to?
I played a little bit of Titan Attacks on the PlayStation Vita. It's a little indie game which I've also got on Steam, but for some reason I didn't really sink down in it into actually playing it that hard on the PC. But I just sat down with the Vita version and I thought, well, it's there. Let's give this a go. Before I knew it, I'd gone through the whole campaign.
Ooh. What kind of game is it?
It's kind of space invadery. It is very retro tinged. It's clearly a modern game, but it's sort of pixel arty, and it has its own power ups, gameplay paths, and variations on classical mechanisms like bonus stages and sources and score multipliers, things like that. If you like something that is just gameplay, but it doesn't look fugly, it's a really nice little game. So, I really enjoyed that on the Vita. And recently I picked up the Humble Bundle Eye Candy 2 pack.
Oh, yeah.
And that included a game called Mind, Path to Thalamus. And I was just playing that earlier today. And it looks lovely. And it was reminding me of kind of a puzzly version of Dear Esther. If anyone's played that.
Not yet.
You need to. It's a nice, it's nice, and it doesn't take that long, Dear Esther. But this had presentation like that, where it has a, you know, the central character that you never see because it's first person, narrates part of the story as it progressed through it. And in this case, instead of rather than just an adventure, which is, you know, what Dear Esther is, you know, it, kind of just using the game as a narrative device. This is a kind of a, you know, a puzzly game.
Okay.
And it's a little bit more abstract because you're in a world which is clearly not real, because it has puzzle aspects like a stone path, which is, you know, elevated above water.
Okay.
But when you look in the water, the reflection is a different path. So you have to remember where the path is from the reflection and ignore what you're experiencing when you're on the path. And then you can, you know, do all these little objectives. I've only played so much of it, so I'll, you know, leave the rest of that. I've also been watching Star Trek Next Generation Season 3 still on Blu-ray. Again, just very quick, but I was watching the writer's commentary, or the staff commentary, on Sins of the Father, which is one of the, you know, the first big Klingon episodes in Star Trek Next Generation. It's the one where Worf has to take the fall for his father, what his father supposedly did. And it was very interesting to watch it because they had Ronald D. Moore, who was the main writer.
Yeah.
Of the episode, and, you know, talking about his experience in the way that he was one of the only, you know, real diehard Star Trek fans on the writing staff at the time. So he could really take advantage of the fact that he was the one who was supposed to know all these things about the Klingons, even though he more or less either just made it up himself or picked it up from some of the books and episodes. And he was talking about how he was, you know, taking in two perspective scripts, which people had written and sent into the show, and he sort of combined them into, you know, that particular episode. So that was interesting. And my final thing I've been doing is I was, again, in another bundle late last year. I think it was Bundle Stars did a complete pack of Batman Arkham games. And I looked it up, and for their asking price, I could get all three Arkham games plus all the DLCs for less than the asking price of the DLC for Arkham Origins. And I thought, well, I'll buy that, and then I've got the single player DLC, the story DLC, and I've got spare keys I can give to, you know, friends or family. If they want, you know, if it's a, you know, you haven't played an Arkham game, have this. There you go, free copy. And it stars Mr. Freeze. It's called Cold, Cold Heart.
Mm.
And I've enjoyed reasonably what I've played of it so far, but it is still buggy. Well, I've encountered bugs where the first time you walk into a room, it will be fine, and you have these railings that you can get up to, you know, higher areas, and you can use, the bat rope or whatever you want to call it, and you can, or bat rappel, whatever. And you can get up there far, absolutely fine. But if you go further into the environment and then come back into that room, for some reason, they won't highlight, and you basically just have to climb up over different things to get onto the same areas because they broke that particular part.
Oh, that's really helpful.
Yeah, and then what my favourite part was, in one of the arena rooms, which, you know, anyone who's played the Arkham games will know what I mean, where you've got like six or seven thugs, and you've got high vantage points, and you have to take them out.
Yeah.
And with this specific room, everything was going absolutely swimmingly until I'd taken out all the the thugs.
Yeah.
And I've still got the fight music going on, and I'm thinking, this is weird. Are they locked in a room or something? So I turned on the detective vision, and turns out it's locked in a bloody wall. So just this orange outline just running on the spot. directly behind a wall, and I'm checking, and it's like, no, there's no room behind there. He is actually behind the wall. And I tried doing, you know, hitting and, you know, batarangs and things like that. Absolutely nothing was getting to him. So I thought, okay, I'll try the, you know, explosive foam.
Yeah.
On the wall.
Yeah.
Did that. Exploded. He sort of stumbled forward and then fell into infinity.
Oh. Brilliant.
And the game was still saying, you know, one enemy still to defeat. So I just sort of ran around in a circle a little bit waiting. And then eventually he went, bing, room clear. I said, oh, God, whoever that, you know, they give, if Rocksteady ever allow another company to do, you know, another Arkham game, and it's, you know, without them, please have more of a controlling, overseeing look, you know, role on this, because it's just, I like the Arkham games, but my God, this is just so buggy. It really is as if it's, you know, some hackers have decided to try and make a new game out of, you know, Arkham City and not quite done it right.
Yeah. Cookie, what have you been up to?
Mm-hmm. Not a lot.
Did you not as much as Retroid.
Did you watch a thing?
I watched several things, actually. I've watched... I wasn't feeling too good, so at the weekend we binge-watched Marco Polo on Netflix, which was quite enjoyable. It's got a lot of duff reviews in that, and I have to agree, some of the dialogue is a bit lame. But it's good brain senseless TV. Just mung out to it.
Is it all about...
Some of the fight scenes are really good in it as well.
Is it all about how he discovered the mint?
Unfortunately not, no. It's actually quite interesting. It's about his early life with being part of the Genghis Khan family in China, as the reign of the Khan sort of comes to an end, and they're trying to take on South China. So it's got a few interesting historical bits in it as well. So I watched that. I've been playing a bit more Lego Marvel Super Heroes, which is enormously enjoyable fun. Now I've discovered the open world bit as well. I'm now let loose in New York, which was cool. I even realised you could actually nick cars just like you can in GTA, which was quite amusing. Very childish moment. When I borrowed the Punisher's van, realised there was rocket launchers, and I pressed the rocket launcher button and just watched half of the Lego cars disappear. And then people were just driving past with the roofs off their Lego cars and just a bottom bit of Lego and the wheels still on it. And I thought, ah, this is fun. So half an hour later, I was still chucking rails, just blowing mindless people up.
You monster.
But I am. It was good fun, though. Good childish fun. And then I've started watching House of Cards on Netflix as well, actually.
Yay!
So I'm on season one, episode 3 or 4. I'm getting into it. I'm loving Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, I think House of Cards is back next month or the following month.
Is it?
It's back soon, yeah.
Season 3.
Yay! Yeah.
So, you might say that. Watching it.
I could possibly comment.
House of Cards is a fabulous series.
Again, anyone who's watched the, you know, or is watched or watching the Kevin Spacey version, you know, that is great, but also watch the original British one.
Yep.
Because that's one of my all-time favourite series.
For a second, mm-hmm. I thought you almost said the Kevin Smith version.
The Kevin Smith version?
That would be interesting.
Oh, man, it just...
That would be a different beast.
That would involve probably an obscene amount of dick and fart jokes and more drug references than the regular versions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
It should be like House of Blunts.
I wonder if they've already discussed... I haven't listened to Smodcast in a while. I do wonder if they've thought of that. House of Blunts. Maybe we should suggest it to them if they haven't. Paul, what have you been up to?
I've been watching a little bit of Franklin and Bash, because we got given the second and third seasons for Christmas. Been waiting for absolutely ages for the second season to come out, and we waited so long that the third season came out not long after, I don't think. So
what is that?
It's basically, it's a kind of lighthearted buddy lawyer show, which also stars Malcolm McDowell.
As
you do.
And also the current guy, well, say the current guy, the guy that played, was it Daniel Whitehall in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, and he's been cropping up in a lot of different stuff recently.
And also, isn't it got thingy from Dawson's Creek in it?
Dawson's Creek?
Is it Dawson Creek? Some after-school special school
Saved
actor?
Saved by the Bell?
Saved by the Bell, there we go.
The guy that played Zach from Saved by the Bell.
I'm sorry.
It won't have Screech in, will it?
No.
Well, possibly being represented.
Yes. But it's got Breckenmeyer in. The latest episode that we watched actually had Eric Mabius and Seth Green in as kind of almost like rival lawyers, which worked really, really well, actually.
I just want to put it on that.
Paul Mark Gosselaar. That's the one, isn't it?
It's sounds familiar.
Yeah.
But it's got black hair rather than blonde hair, and it just kind of throws you off slightly.
I just want to put it on the Screech updates that have come out the past day. He didn't murder the dude.
No.
Okay.
Although I'd heard they'd got into a fight.
Yeah.
And then you know that I heard about the he didn't murder anyone. And I was like, what? Oh, the internet again. Yeah. Oh, you internet.
You've also been playing stuff.
Yes. Jeez. So I've been playing a lot of Smash Bros. For the Wii U a lot.
Cool.
Mostly playing like the 8-player mode and stuff.
With amiibos.
With amiibos, training them up and allowing them to fight and whatnot. And yeah, that's interesting. It's,
challenging, one assumes.
I think I do miss the classic mode, though, because they kind of... There's no classic mode in that sense anymore. Instead, you have, the kind of board gamey type one, which can get really kind of a bit annoying.
I have no idea what's happening in that any time I play that mode.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck? Basically. Mm.
Then you have kind of a revamped version of the All-Stars mode, where it's instead of kind of being in like by game, it's by date of year that the character actually came out. It's one of those games where you're kind of unlocking stuff all the time as well. There's just so much to unlock and so much to actually do in the game. It's kind of weird, how you can kind of not take videos and whatnot. You can kind of collect trophies. You can use those trophies and kind of create scenes with them and take photos and then draw on the photos and then share your photos. And there's just so much to do. It's
I'm confused.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a bit of a confusing game to navigate as well.
Sounds like fun.
I haven't played online on the Wii U version yet. In fact, I don't think I've actually done it for the 3DS version either. But
I thought you did for 3DS.
I think I might have done one match or so. Yeah, I think I've done a couple of matches for the 3DS version, but I haven't ventured onto the Wii U version online yet. And over the weekend went over to a friend's house who has a Wii, and we playing Smash Bros. Brawl there. I owned with Jigglypuff.
You normally do. Cool.
Yeah, that was quite a fun match. It was just like because I think I was against a Pikachu, Ganon, and another one that isn't too fast. So that was fairly easy to do the kind of down and B move, like when you're right kind of over them, and it would just send them flying, which is really fun. And yeah, that's what I've been doing. So, Emily, what have you been doing?
Well, I finally have all the three core books for 5th Ed D&D.
Cool.
And so I've started reading, really getting into the Player's Handbook. I'm not like majorly through the. It's really detailed for a lot of things like races and classes. And partway through.
For a second, I thought you were going to say for racism. It's really detailed for racism.
You can't have just general racism.
Gives you all the elvish words that they used for dwarves.
And I'm partway through looking at classes at the moment. I'm really appreciating how they've tried to not overly complicate things in the various sections and that they're like, okay, well, this is basically how this thing works. We're going to explain it in more detail in obviously a way that's going to be easy and quick for you to use when you're actually doing stuff in a later chapter. And it's just fantastic how things have been spread out and laid out in the books. It's just, it's refreshing after a year of Pathfinder and then trying to grapple with previous editions of D&D like during research. So yes, I'm really appreciating that, and I'm obviously hoping to run a campaign at some point in the near future.
Well, I should hope so if you've got the books.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we tried watching a DVD that I'd won through a after 8 eating contest.
What?
Before Thank Christmas.
What?
You'll have to explain the contest.
Okay, so we went to a Christmas party. There was a contest to eat after 8 using only your face. And
so you couldn't use your hands.
And you had to slide them down your face.
Yeah. And I was the best and fastest at doing this.
To be fair, though, I was second, so either way we would have got it.
Yeah. But then,
this just sounds like how I spend Christmas parties.
it's not even like any games. You just stick an after 8 on your face and you're like, Paul Wood's doing that thing again. God.
To be fair,
it's just late in the Christmas party. The after 8s are out. Everyone's had a little bit.
Yeah. To be fair, if you've
face walker,
if you really go at it, that's quite a workout for your face. So maybe you could use up enough calories to justify eating the after 8 in
Probably
the process.
Not,
might.
But it's worth trying.
Yeah.
It's worth testing a lot as well, because it just does comparison.
So also, don't do it when you've got a hot face.
Yeah, just melts everywhere. It melts it into your eyes. That's a good one. But we won a DVD copy of Ninja Zombies.
That sounds like a quality release.
So we decided to try and watch it with a friend on New Year's Eve, you know, because we couldn't think of anything better to do with our time than this, you know.
Let's watch this. It can't be that bad.
It was that bad. I mean, I've watched bad films and I have certain expectations for low budget films because of the capabilities that we have with our own skills and kit. And it was just like, oh my God, this is worse than something we could make in skill writing skills, sure. But also like sound and lighting and act. I mean, I wouldn't
editing,
say
camera work, everything.
Everything. And we managed just under 10 minutes, over 5. And they got to the scene where the protagonist, who was very stereotypical nerdy geek dude, had gone out into a different bit of the room, sort of like shared house he was in or whatever, started talking to a neighbour, and they had not done audio replacement, and so you just had all this echoing.
You could tell that it was basically the sound from the camera, and the sound from the camera wasn't very good either.
Yeah.
Hooray.
It was just...
It's a sci-fi film or something.
It's about zombies who are ninjas. It's not a sci-fi film. It's just a horror film
In every respect.
And it had this really bad setup whereby a bunch of like Japanese, and you can even tell which social group they were from, a bunch of Japanese people had ended up in America, North America, at some point in the 1500s. And had left stuff there, like this sword and this bunch of ninja zombies.
Right, okay.
So we just gave up on that. And then we did manage to improve, really, on the bad film situation this past week, because yesterday evening at another friend's house, same friends that those Super Smash Bros. Brawl happened at, we tried watching a 2009 film called Prototype, which suspiciously had a logo that looked like the logo from the game and a main character called Alex.
It was Alex Mercer, wasn't it?
I'm not sure if it had the same surname, but okay. He definitely had the same first name. And it was just like, uh-huh. And the write-up sounded completely nothing like the game. It was like, oh, this guy is down on his luck, gets telekinetic power glove things, does nasty shit.
Is this a U-Ball
film? No.
That was one of the first parts.
That was one of the first things we looked for. There were plenty of U-Ball films available, we found, whilst hunting for stuff. This was not one of them. And it had no storyline similarities really at all with the video games of the same name.
It does make me wonder whether we could like make a video which is like Son of Bowl.
but this film, it was about some guy called Alex who lives in this small community somewhere in America. He like lives in a trailer park. He's ridiculously religious, preferring Catholicism as his religiousness of choice.
Oh, that was
and
I
it
do
just,
remember that cringeworthy.
And it just kept working in tons of religious references for no good reason. And what was essentially a revenge movie, because he's like a underappreciated guy who gets treated like shit by friends, family, and the local community, and then gets hold of these power gloves that do telekinesis, and he goes almost like all scanners on people by the looks of things. And
obviously.
And yeah, it was just like, we gave up after about half an hour.
I remember kind of looking up, and you know, I think I was doing something at the time. I think I'm watching YouTube videos on my phone.
Yeah.
And I kind of look up, and like the main character was having a conversation about, you know, sort of like, oh, there's atheist friend, and it's like, oh, how do you you know that there's a God? And it's like, how do you know that there isn't? Ah, no. Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
The only thing this film had going for it over Ninja Zombies was that the sound quality was better. That was it. Then I've also this past week got into Minecraft on the Vita quite a bit. I've built a house that looks very it's kind of like this weird sort of oak plank glass construct that reminds me a lot of various bits of modernistic architecture I've seen over the years that people who get paid more than my dad tend to be asked to design. And it's just like,
you should clarify what your dad does.
My dad's an architectural technologist. He draws plans for stuff, and they get built, you know, if they get planning permission for it.
Cool.
You can't just say it's like,
he designed a home that was based on a geodesic dome way before the Eden project was built. It was for a home that was going to be based in Surrey, but they refused planning permission.
Which planet?
This planet.
Oh.
It wasn't, unfortunately, like in the stars, kind of running style or something.
Oh.
And yeah, so I managed to eventually tame a wolf, and the last time I played it, which was, I think, maybe Saturday or Friday, I had managed to finally find my first dungeon type thing, and I'd managed to raid a bunch of chests successfully and not trip off a bunch of pressure plates that would have destroyed the entire location. So I felt pretty good about myself. Oh, and we managed to play a couple of hours of Alien Isolation.
We have yet to see the alien, though.
We've seen its tail.
Through a guy.
Yeah. We've realised humans are bad. That, you know, stuff like that.
Mm. And kind of partway through, because I got given a kind of a Nerf set for Christmas, which is like Nerf gun darts and kind of this dartboardy type thing. And we'd stuck that up on the door. And then, you know, that was the time that I decided to go and crash on the floor.
Just the wrong moment. And we jumped miles.
Yeah. It was like, ah!
It was fabulous. I played TXK for the first time.
Yes!
Cool.
And I managed 4 levels on, I don't know which mode. Four levels.
4?
Yeah. I don't play games of that general nature, like, ever. So it was taking some getting used to. I'm going to mute.
I imagine it would. What did you think of it then?
I thought it looked very pretty, and I liked all the bright colours.
All those are good.
Oh, and the music was nice too.
Yes, the music, there is some very nice music in there, but yeah, I think it only changes something like every 15, 18 levels or so.
Yeah, it's going to take a while. But I like the fact that whichever mode I was playing on, that regardless of how bad I did, if I obviously progressed to that level, I could restart on that level.
Yes.
Rather than going all the way back to the beginning, which was nice. Just before I move us on to a feature for this week, I just wanted to point out that if you enjoy listening to the show and use stuff like iTunes or even Stitcher, you could leave us a review, because that helps us.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. You know, because it's all good. I'm not saying that, you know, we don't appreciate having you as a listener, but it helps the podcast generally when we have more listeners. Just saying, you know.
We like you all so much that we want more of you.
Yes. It's like gummy bears.
Apart from that one listener, you know who you are.
sorry. I just want to move us on now to our feature, and... I don't know how long we're going to talk about this, I hope, you know, but Russell Crowe made some comments past day or so.
As he sometimes very does when...
silly
he,
comments.
Yeah.
His handlers aren't
around. Yeah, and it led me to think about, or maybe we should have a brief discussion about ageism in film and television. Unfortunately, specifically how it affects female actors and actresses far more than men. And basically, Crowe kind of said that older women shouldn't expect to play roles younger than their actual age.
And as romantic leads.
Essentially, they should just be, you know, spent women that have, you know, little to offer life and are some kind of spinster stereotype.
Hey, you, excuse me, Wizened Husk, what do you think?
I don't know, I'm too old.
Meanwhile, obviously, in the industry, generally in both film and television, you have male actors or even TV personalities who are, regardless of age, being allowed to do whatever the fudge they pretty much want at regardless of the age.
One could say whoever the fudge.
Yeah, that too. And it just kind of got me thinking, you know, why should this be a concern? And... you know, is there anything that maybe could be done to improve matters? Obviously, over here in the UK a few years ago, there was just the general sort of ageism row at the BBC, which keeps resurfacing every now and then. Mm. Started with poor Moira Stewart?
I believe so, yeah.
Being sacked from presenting news on the BBC, and it was like it became quite clear that it seemed to have something to do with her age rather than her ability,
because she's awesome, is Maura Stewart, so screw you.
Meanwhile, the number of much older male television personalities and presenters on BBC shows remains quite steady, but you try to look for a woman who's over the age of 50 on the BBC or any other British television channel, actually, for that matter, and it begins to get a bit difficult. Except for maybe the British Bake Off, and that's about it. Because they got, you know, Thingy Berry.
Oh, Mary Berry.
Mary Berry.
Yeah.
Mary Berry.
With her soggy bottom. I mean, comments.
The thing is that, you know, if you've... The way film works is that if you've got somebody that's perfect for the role... Then, well, I mean, you can always adapt the role slightly...
Yeah, of course you can.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
And
to be fair,
the thing is that they never change anything from source material to the screen, do they?
Heck, you can never, like, change genders and you know, racial profiling and whatnot, and you know that's fine. But oh, apparently you know can't change an older woman's character to something else.
I mean, staffed as well, because I mean you can see there are certain actresses who've been able to beat the ageism. I think in some respects, like Dame Judi Dench, Helen Mirren.
I think there's a bit of a problem with picking out, Dame Judi Dench, and that's because her she's actually been more prolific when she was older. She, you know, hasn't had to kind of face that kind of, oh, she's no longer beautiful, therefore we're going to put her out to pasture type thing.
No, but I mean, my point is the fact that you can still have older women in your films and stuff, and it still works really, really well. That was my point. It does work. But it's proven that.
I think
Helen Mirren in Red 2 is just amazing.
Just thinking there, with saying about Helen Mirren and you know Judi Dench not having to you know face the oh is she more you know appearance than you know ability. Helen Mirren did face that when she started.
She was relatively young. There's no easy nice way of saying that she was younger when she was younger.
In fact, I've possibly mentioned it before in here, but there's a really toe-curling interview that she did with Parkinson. In the 70s, where he's basically saying, yeah, but you're just a pretty face, and that's the only reason you got the job.
Ouch.
So, wow. Seriously, look it up. Michael Parkinson, Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
It's like watching a worst of, you know, if you know what I mean, segment of The Office. If someone's compiled, you know, just toe-curling it into several minutes.
I was just going to, just to bring us round to Crow's comments, which I've got quoted, he said, to be honest, I think you'll find that the woman who is saying that the roles have dried up is the woman who is at 40, 45, 48, still wants to play the, I can never pronounce that, Ingen?
I have no idea. Is that meant to be ingenuine or something?
No, because there's no I before that E. Basically, someone younger who is in love and stuff and can't understand why she's not being cast as the 21-year-old, said Crow. Meryl Streep will give you 10,000 examples and arguments as to why that's bullshit. So will Helen Mirren or whoever it happens to be. If you are willing to live in your own skin, you can work it as an actor. If you're trying to pretend that you're still the young buck... if you're still trying to pretend that you're the young buck when you're my age, it just doesn't work. He added, I have heard of an actress part of a fee negotiation was getting the number of children she was supposed to have lessened. Can you believe this? This character was a woman with four children, and there were reasons why she had to have four children. Mainly, she lived in a cold climate, and there was nothing to do but fornicate all day. So quit arguing, just play the role.
I find this spectacular coming from someone like Crow. First of all, is he only going to be playing father role characters now?
Yeah.
After Noah, I don't fucking think so.
And, you know, well, second of all, it's Crow. Shut up. The amount of times he's put his foot in it.
Yeah.
So Helen Mirren and, you know, anyone else that he mentions, you know, they have no problem getting the roles. That's probably because they're some of the few roles like that available, so they get them because they're big names.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you're not exactly tripping over, you know, powerful women or, you know, just actually really good female characters in films. So that's where it kind of falls over. It's like, oh, yeah, you could just do other roles. It's like, yeah, what other roles?
Yeah. I mean, and it's also just, it's frustrating to the portrayal of what women are like actually when they're older. I mean, a lot of women, once they get through this thing called the menopause, as far as I can tell, there's quite a few women who suddenly find they almost have like a second youth if they manage to handle the hormonal differences that then change. Like, they actually feel more attractive and active and stuff, and they want to get out of there and do things and live life, you know, because they will no longer have kids that they're looking after and all that kind of thing. They might even be divorced by this point, you know, that sort of thing. You know, want to get out there, live life. And so to have this kind of trail that, well, once a woman's this age anyway, she doesn't do anything like that anyway, is absolute fucking bullshit. Because there are women out there doing that kind of thing. There's women launching careers and starting businesses and doing things that men of that age probably aren't doing.
I mean, it's not just that, but it's also to do with the fact that in the end, it's kind of how well you can act that age as well.
Yeah.
Whether you can actually convince the audience that, you know, you're 21 because you're acting in such a way where you are fleeting or, you know, describing the character as you play it.
But and maybe I mean, there should
be fair though. I mean, a lot of these characters don't even normally have to have an age associated with them anyway.
Exactly.
Mm. I mean, what's the issue of the age anyway?
And
as long as they do the role justice and they actually are perfect for the role, what's the problem?
I mean, also, what is with perhaps the number of roles being written that are focused on younger female characters? You get bloody Richard Gere can still get blimmin' parts and things, as can Michael Douglas if he's feeling well enough, you know?
Yeah.
What's... Or Dustin Hoffman, Martin Sheen, Nicholson.
Bill Murray.
Yeah, all these.
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd is slowly looking closer to Nixon.
A chunky Nixon.
Yeah, chunky Nixon. Which is kind of, yeah.
Scary.
But yeah, it's like there's quite a few roles for older male actors that they can. I mean, God's sake, Pierce Brosnan before Christmas had a new spy thriller out in which he played, I can't remember the name of the film, but he plays like a former CIA operative who's got a deal with some Cold War bullshit thing from the past in Russia and is playing like this game of cat and mouse with a younger agent. And he's Brosnan's the lead in this role. And it's and Brosnan's not young anymore. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it just goes to the point. I mean, one of my favourite films the last couple of years have been Red 2. And if you look at how old all the characters are in that, it's just really good film. And they're all good action heroes as well, as far as I'm concerned. So...
I'll just surprise everyone by saying I've never seen Red or Red 2.
I wasn't that impressed with the first film, and so I haven't watched the second one.
Yet.
The second one's better than the first, in my opinion. I enjoyed it more than the first.
You can play some more TXK while you you know, wait for the second one.
Can I just point out, Rebecca Rose wrote over on Jezebel that, just a quote, alert, Hollywood movie actor person Russell Crowe is fed up with all the old ladies who dare to want to be cast as something other than old spinsters or whatnot. It's like, yeah, that's pretty much. And she points out, you know, why isn't Crowe offering any opinion about, because this whole, oh, you know, once you reach this certain age as a male actor, you don't tend to go playing young bucks and that. And it's like, yeah, but you fail to kind of acknowledge the fact that there's a huge number of Hollywood men who have and still are playing romantic leads to women who are perhaps 10, 20, 30, or 40 years younger than those actors.
And those things can happen, but...
What's this about guys not playing young bucks anymore? I mean, Bruce Willis is still doing Die Hard.
Yeah.
He's
still in, like, Sin City.
Let's face it, yeah, the Expendables seems to keep on going a bit. So, you know. Have you watched the third one? Is that what that is for?
I have, unfortunately, seen the third one. Red 2 just kicks its ass. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I prefer the Red franchise.
Okay. That's fair.
To be honest, the character's a lot more likeable and,
I mean,
the Expendables 3 was good to see Mel Gibson play a psycho, and that's about it.
But the whole thing about female...
Which is really sad, isn't it?
Yeah, he's kind of playing himself there.
Yeah. The whole thing about, going back to the problem here, the whole thing about, you know, female actresses not being apparently able to play younger roles and all that, it's giving them a shelf life for playing roles of a certain type. And it kind of feeds into this annoyingly persistent kind of, use some words, or patriarchal paradigm where men are regardless, almost forever, what's the word? Is it virital?
Virile.
Forever virile.
Oh, yeah.
Which is absolute fecking bullshit. Bollocks. Because science has proven otherwise.
Han Solo, come on.
It's like...
Didn't Thingy get problems filming Star Wars?
Well, it's not just about... the whole stereotype of the forever...
Yeah, he broke his ankle, didn't he?
Yeah, yes. He did. Stereotype, though, the sort of like the virile man, you know, regardless of age, you're still up for stuff, goes back to the idea that apparently you... Because obviously women stop being able to have kids after a certain age because we have the menopause, and men can continue to produce sperm. And it's like, yeah, but the quality of that sperm goes really downhill after a certain age, especially if they haven't looked after themselves. So it's just kind of like this whole stereotype. It's built on cultural crap that is already there, and it's something that needs to be challenged. And I would like to see older ladies in more favourable roles. Poor Susan Sarandon. We watched Tammy on New Year's Eve after the Ninja Zombies mistake. And, it was just kind of like, why is she the grandmother? It doesn't make sense, especially with the ages of, like, the other... female characters in the film. It was just like, she's the grandmother, but she's not. I mean, she didn't look that old. The only way she looked old was because they decided to make up her feet, not to look like hobbit feet, but to look like she had the most ridiculous levels of water retention for a woman who was clearly a size 12 to 14, which is not the kind of body that tends to end up with really bad water retention. So... yeah, it was just like, is this the only kind of role now that poor Susan Sarandon, who is fabulous as an actress, generally,
she's can great. Get?
You know, is playing grandmother to two women who are really too old to be her daughter and granddaughter. It just didn't make...
Just weird, just causing too much of a...
Yeah.
Cognitive dissonance with it. Just what?
Yeah. Ageism sucks in film and television, and it tends to be
ageism sucks in generally.
For the roles where a personal appearance matters so much, it seems to matter far more for women than men. I mean, blimmin' Bruce Forsyth on the BBC. He's only retired in the past year. Poor Moira Stewart. You know, was still pretty with it, still appearance-wise looking a lot better than Bruce Forsyth, who's older than her.
Yeah, you know? I find Brucey a little bit scary.
You know, it's just... ageism in the media and anywhere sucks. And I think that generally we should be standing up against it a bit more.
Yeah, there's a certain level of privilege. And I know we're using a lot of buzzwords that, you know, what is it, social justice warriors or whatever you use?
Apparently.
Like Captain Picard.
Sorry?
Yeah. Like Captain Picard, the original SJW. kind of.
But, you know, it makes sense to us.
Well, I personally prefer the idea of it's an advantage rather than a privilege, because I think, you know, privilege makes it sound a little bit wrong,
like
a little bit like, you know,
you're
having a go at the person, whereas if you have an advantage, everyone can see that you've got an advantage if you're born, you know, like white and male.
But I think this is all we've got time for this week. So Cookie's already had to drop off because he's got shizzle to deal with. But I think that's all we've got time for this week. So please, if you've got a chance, do check out our survey for feedback, because it will help us, you know, shape the show. We've been going for over 100 episodes. We're not We're not stuck in our ways. We greatly appreciate feedback about what we can do differently or better.
Speak for yourself. I'm stuck in my way.
If you could fill out the survey at bit.ly/nerds2015, that'd be great. So that's all we've got time for this week. So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EK6891. I would also really like it if you went and looked at geekyknittingexperiments.tumblr.com because there's some cool stuff up on there. I posted up a creeper hat today that somebody had knitted that looked pretty cool.
A creeper hat?
Yeah, a creeper hat, as in Minecraft creeper.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What did you think she meant?
I don't know.
Was it like a vine or something?
You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk.
That's three W's in that.
Yeah. Sorry. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher, at Twitter at Nerds Podcast, but you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com. And please, please do fill out the survey because it would be very helpful. So thank you.
May you get a cookie.
We're going to send cookie over to people who can pick. That's not what I meant. He goes off air and you're suggesting that we just...
Well, that's where he's going to. He's going to visit the person that's actually filled it out so far.
Let me get this straight. We're pimping him out then, yeah?
It sounds a bit like it.
I think that is the plan now.
Oh, dear. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Good night.
And Paul, we'll see you later.
Good night.